Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Vasselli.
Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Vasselli.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Vasselli.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, buckle up, folks. Here we go. 2 hours of football mayhem on a Wednesday night. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville, I'm Brian Sexton. Across the table, you know Jeff Lagerman. Tony Vasselli has made his way in, probably smelled the Seabest seafood.
Outstanding. Whatever that little...
The little pie was good.
Little pie, like cornbread crust.
Yeah, we've had a steady stream of folks coming in. The scallops.
I've had two of those.
Joe
and I will have three.
You will. Well, make sure there's another one over there.
I'm glad I got one before you. There's two left over there, big boy.
Well, unless Gene steals it.
It was good.
I'll fight him for it, though. I'll tell you how much right now.
It kind of had like a...
I might lose, but like I'll fight him for it.
I don't think you can beat him, too.
Crab meat and sausage kind of pie with cheese on top and a cornbread little crust.
I might eat both of those.
We're not even at our Thanksgiving show, which is generally the culinary show that we do here on Jaguars This Week. So Seabest Seafood is here this evening.
Outstanding.
And everyone approves that. John Osher's chair is empty at this point.
Osher quit, I think.
And this may be him coming. We may have to tell him the show actually starts
at
6:06.
Yeah, he'll be here shortly. He likes to get a little workout in.
There he is. Hello, John.
John, nice of you to show up. We started already.
Okay.
Well, he knows that. He knows that, you know, starting and being
because
in the
chair, you're late. Because you're late, you get the broken chair.
He brought his notepad too, so look out.
He's not the only guy who rolls in here late, so we'll just roll on with that. 355 NFL1.
I was on time, baby.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about you. 800-355-6351. Folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. On to the Berg.
Pittsburgh.
First trip back to Pittsburgh since 07.
Yeah, and at some point we'll go back to...
Are we skipping the game?
No, we're not.
No,
Going to skip
back,
the game.
Tony.
Because
I'm going to.
I don't want to skip the game because, you know, I want to kind of just make a comment here about Matt Turk. You know, hey, look, everybody knew it was kind of coming that he was going to get cut. And then he opened his mouth on the way out the door, so to speak.
What'd he say?
It was pathetic.
What'd he say?
He said that, you know, they asked him to do something that he's never done in his career, and that's directional punting.
And the 1-10
last time I checked, there was no directional punting by Matt Turk. The direction he was punting was the wrong way.
Well, my favorite Matt Turk quote is he had a 1-10 chance of hitting a good punt.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
Aren't you a professional?
So you're getting ready to punt a ball. In your mind, you're thinking, I've only got a 10% chance to hit this thing good. Are you kidding me?
I think that was a silly statement trying to say something that he was probably trying to say something that was relatively
true.
Stop
defending him.
Well, I mean, there were a couple of players who said the same thing. The wind was brutal.
Okay.
It was a tough situation.
Yeah, it's tough.
He clearly said it very much the wrong way. And I mean, you know what? The biggest problem
there's
I had
a lot
was
of
the gesture to the crowd.
How long has Matt Turk been playing?
Since 96.
So he's 43 years old or something like that? He's old.
You know, there's a
21-year-old rookie who took complete ownership of a situation that was not his fault. And so when you're 43 years old and you've been around a little bit, I don't care if it's the most difficult situation. There's ice, you know, stuck to your, you know, the ball in your hands, you can't catch it, whatever. You don't make an excuse. You're a professional athlete.
No.
But here's the thing.
And you have some class on the way out the door.
Class. But, I mean, well, why do we
– I think he showed his colors with the gesture. I mean, that's – you know, that was
he was
weak.
Cut because he wasn't performing, right?
Correct.
You know what I would like to –
there's maybe some more.
You know what I'd like to have done at that point when he made that gesture? Call down.
I mean, come on.
Send him the locker room. Take your pads off. Scobes, you're going to handle the punt the rest of the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Has Scobie, to your knowledge, ever punted, or you just figure he's got a
long care. I don't care. Any of the big boys want to punt? You know.
Yeah.
I would listen.
I wouldn't have cared.
I agree with Jeff. But, listen, if we're thinking that Matt Turk losses the game, we're kidding ourselves.
No.
Oh, I don't think anybody really thinks that.
And
he had a hand in
it. Oh, I'd say there's quite a few fans who
Yeah, but here's
think
the thing.
That.
What's the quote that our head coach has said? This is a performance business, and if you don't perform, you're gone?
Yes.
Well, we got a long list of people that better start performing.
Here's the list.
Because at 1-4, losing at home, there's no excuse. And don't tell me, well, we have a rookie quarterback. So do they. Don't tell me we're rebuilding. They've stunk forever. I mean, I am so tired of hearing the excuses. And here's the thing. I don't blame the fans. I had to write this blog today that I write every week, and I'm thinking, there's no sugarcoating it. There's no silver lining. Hey, we're getting better. I'm tired of saying we're getting better. It's time to perform. 12 men on the field again? Really? I mean, how long are we going to play this game? 10 guys with 4th and 7? This has happened a couple times this year as well. Whose fault's that? Where's the accountability for that? Is that Matt Turk's fault?
I can blame him for that too if you really want to.
I'm tired of it. I'm tired of turning on the tape and seeing receivers running right next to each other looking like one guy can cover them.
That is a problem.
I'm tired of free blitzers coming and every receiver's back is to the quarterback. I mean, I'm tired of guys sliding in a direction and guys coming the other way. It looks like we don't know what we're doing.
So how do you really feel?
I mean, I'm tired of it.
Tony's tired.
I don't want to be I said this in the blog. Losing sucks. It sucks to lose. And I'm tired of as a fan, I'm tired of it. As part of Team Teal and helping sell tickets, I'm tired of trying to make excuses and justify it. And as a part of this organization, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of losing. We are better than that, and we should be better than what we see right now.
And Jacksonville needs and deserves better than that.
Yes.
This team is too important.
I'm tired of people saying these fans don't care.
You're right.
Care? What do you mean they don't care?
Oh, there's no question they care.
They care.
No question they care.
Don't tell me we're not a good football market because, you know, we have to buy some tickets. Well, let's win. What happens if you win? What if you're 4-1? What if you're 3-2?
Instead of 1-7 in the last 8 regular season games.
How about 1-4 this year, averaging 11 points a game? I had one guy in the plane yesterday.
Tony, it's not 11 points.
What is it, Jeff?
9.8.
Okay. Under 10 points. I had to fly to Fort Lauderdale yesterday for some business. On the way back, I had a person come up to me. First of all, I was a little uncomfortable. I was walking down the aisle, and I see this guy recording his iPhone pointing right at me. Wow. I'm thinking,
oh, come on. For real?
For real. No lie.
Well, you are a celebrity.
I'm a pretty big deal. Just ask me. And so anyways, I go sit down in the
back.
Were you
sitting in first class?
No, it was in Southwest. It's a cattle call.
Yeah, then there's...
So I'm just cattle calling back, and got my ticket late, so I had a B, so I'm just... runs him 3 across all the way back. Just thankful I didn't have a middle
seat. There's a guy with the iPhone going, oh, my God, it's Tony Baselli.
Yeah. But he came up to me during the flight. Nice guy. He goes, you're Tony Baselli, aren't you? I go, yeah. He goes, I just want to tell you, loved watching you guys play. Your team's – and he goes, I've been a season ticket holder since day one. And he says, I am tired. He goes, I just want us to win. He goes, you know what? Forget winning. I just want to go and it to be exciting. I just want this – to be excited at the game. And I looked at him.
Absolutely.
I looked at him. I said, you know what? And I'm not going to say the other thing he said. Maybe I will.
Put that in the blog.
But it's frustrating. I mean, listen, and we can break this down today, but
it's got to be better.
It has to be better. Listen, at the end of the day,
and I'm with Tony.
At the end of the day, Jack Del Rio is the head coach, and he is responsible for this. And it's a performance business, and right now we're not performing, and we have not performed.
For accuracy's sake, they're averaging about 11.8 points a game. They exploded past the 10-point barrier.
Yeah. Oh, they did?
They scored 20.
I told you 11.
Sexton's math is wrong. I got my number from Brian. Yeah.
They're way past 10.
Whether it's 9 or 11, it's awful.
And yeah, we're good.
And you know what? John. There's no more excuses. We can break down – we'll talk about them because I watched the coaches tape this week. And what you see on there, there's some really good parts. There's parts of our defense.
There's some really good things.
There are some really good things on defense. But guess what? It's not good enough because we're not winning. And there are some really pitiful things.
Log, I forgot the 10 points in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's okay. But there are some good things. And just to
– But there's some – Jeff, there's some awful.
Just to give a little positive here after this, Tony Baselli –
I mean, do you disagree with anything I said?
No, I don't. You know, and I really agree with you with the 12 men on the field, the 10 men on the field.
Come on.
And then the
this isn't Pop Warner. This isn't high school.
The Maurice touchdown, there was 10.
Was it the touchdown or the play before the touchdown?
Touchdown, I believe, okay. and then the fourth and seven was 10, and then Matt Roth walked out there late.
No, you're absolutely right.
Don't you play with 11?
No, you're absolutely right. In professional
football, being inside the 5-yard line twice and coming away with 6 points.
But there were some good things. You know,
what? When you're 1-4, listen, there's nothing good.
No, right now they're not a good football team. But the one thing, though, that from watching it again and watching it real close on Monday, I mean, defensively, I mean, the 52 and 51 are fantastic.
Those two guys are studs.
They are so good. And the front seven is playing so well.
Terrence,
I mean,
is a stud.
Holy cow.
I feel bad for Tyson Oluolu. I mean,
But you know what? Tyson's playing hard, and he's playing well.
He's just a guy right now, Jeff.
Nah, he's more than a guy.
No, he's a hard-working, solid player when he has the ability,
yep,
when he's healthy.
That's not a guy. A hard-working playmaker is not a solid player.
No, but he's not a playmaker. He has the ability.
He's not a playmaker, but he's playing well.
But what is so frustrating to me, he has the ability to be a superstar if he's healthy. He is that type of
ability.
Oh,
yeah, we saw that all in training
camp. And that's what's frustrating.
But he's still playing hard.
I know.
He's still playing well.
A ton of respect for him.
And that's one of the big reasons. And that's one of the big reasons why 51 and 52 are just, eating up the statistics column. I mean, so defensively, real strong. The thing that I was most excited about was Blaine Gabbert. And in particular, just the improvement that he made from New Orleans to this game with his footwork.
Yeah, I think his feet are just
and the way he played the game, I thought were outstanding. The way he shuffled and moved in the pocket to find openings and to get rid of the ball, I thought was a big step up for him. A big step up.
Hold the thought.
Let me just clarify one thing about Tyson. I know we got to go to break.
Yeah, okay.
Don't miss. I think Tyson is a superstar and has that type of ability. My frustration is for him that he's not healthy and he can't do. You can tell he can't do what he wants to do. He does not have the explosion. And I feel terrible for him. It's
yeah, but I don't want you to give the people the impression that he's a liability because he's not.
He's a solid player. When I watched him play in training camp, and you watch him as glimpses of a rookie, this is a three technique that can go to Hawaii, and not because he lives there, because he should go play in the Pro Bowl. I mean that, and so I feel bad, and especially I'm dealing with my own injuries. You feel bad when you're sitting there watching the guy knowing he is better.
Can you take a breath for a minute so Brian can send it to a break so I can have a bite of my dessert?
Yeah, I'm
going
to
go.
Can I have a bite of that dessert too? Come on. Where'd you get that?
Folks, it's fired up in here tonight. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna returns from Everbank Field on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, here we go. Rolling right along. 355-NFL 1-800-355-6351. At Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, call Lagerman. And we will get these tweets in here over the course of the program. Do you have anything you want to go to now? Should we grab a caller?
Yeah, let's do the injury report real quick, because this is kind of disturbing, I guess you could say, because there are a lot of Jaguars on the injury report. Derek Cox, Montel Owens, Darryl Smith with a head did not participate. So Derek and Montel didn't participate. Darryl Smith, which I thought he was fine coming out of the game, did participate with head. And that makes you nervous because, we know how cautious they are about concussions, and he's one of the best players they got that might not be available against Pittsburgh.
And he wasn't on the field today, which is another sign that, it may be, I don't want to speculate because I don't know, but that's not a good sign.
Day off, need a nap or something. I don't know.
No, it was a concussion.
Well, when you say head, that, alarm bells go off and all the signs are lit up.
How bad?
You got to watch. Well, you don't know.
But all I know is he wasn't there today. And
Drew Coleman was, right?
Right, with a
– he was limited.
With the same – head in the parentheses.
So here's the limited group, which is all the rest of them. Tyson Alualu, Drew Coleman, Courtney Green, Jason Hill, Greg Jones, which that's not injury-related. Neither is Maurice Jones-Drew injury-related. Aaron Campman was limited. Rasheen limited, not injury-related with Rasheen. Zach Miller, shoulder limited. Eugene Monroe, shoulder limited. Kasim Osgood, hamstring limited. Clint Session, elbow limited. Didn't know about anything that happened to him in a game. And then Guy Wimper, hip. With Eugene Monroe, on that list, now Guy Wimper pops up.
And Jack described Eugene Monroe as extremely limited. It didn't, that leads you to believe that Sunday will be very dicey, obviously.
Is that, 16, 17 people? Let's see, 1, 2, 3.
It's a lot.
17. But, 17, that's basically a third of the roster.
Jeff had to take his shoes off to keep going.
Whew.
So, a big number.
That's a very big number.
Well, you just hope they're you hope the guy's limited, he'll be ready to play. I mean, listen, nobody's healthy. I mean, I don't. It's hard to compare that list to when we played, Jeff, because they didn't have the coaches didn't have to go list it like that when
right.
we played, and so it's very difficult. But I mean, so I can't even compare. Did we have that many guys limited and stuff in practice? I mean, I just don't. I mean, maybe we did, but it was you don't have.
Well,
that
we were
list.
All. We I think everybody.
Everyone
you
had.
Could,
it.
You could list everybody that's,
yeah, that's
limited in some fashion, but I mean, the one though that just jumps out
the
at
head
me
is what worries
Darryl
me.
Smith head sure. did not participate.
That worries right. me because yep. there was never. I mean, if you. I can't remember anyone ever missing practice because of a concussion from the week before. Because it was just different.
Yeah, that's, it's fairly common now.
No, it's common. No, right. I'm not questioning it. I mean, that's just the NFL.
Clearly there's
day.
A difference
it's
between
not just Jacksonville.
Darryl and Drew Coleman,
no,
who was there today.
Yeah, it's not just Jacksonville. It's every team deals with the concussion issue now. It's a different NFL. And so you just have to hope. You know, Michael Vick had a concussion a number of weeks ago and sat out all day,
right.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Practice limited Thursday, practice Friday, and played in the game, and he was fine.
Right.
He,
the key thing to notice about the Jaguars' injury reports this year, they don't go full pads until Thursday.
And so it's hard
so
to tell.
It's very difficult until after practice Thursday
yep.
to get so that true gauge on what's going on. But clearly, Darryl not being out there,
that
not being able
that's
to,
worrisome because he's
not
one
good.
Of our best players.
I mean, is that a case of them saying, stay home, sleep it off, see if you're better tomorrow?
You hope?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know
right.
if he was here or not. And then,
right.
you know, we're not going to get that information.
Come out of the field.
I did not know that.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know. We don't know anything, I guess. I don't know. I hear a lot of I don't know. That's good radio.
Well, when it comes to the injury report,
we don't.
How do you?
Because you don't.
Right.
No, it's reading tea leaves, and they don't tell anything, and they shouldn't have told you anything on Wednesday.
Grab a quick call here before we break at the bottom of the hour. Tommy's in Arlington. Tommy, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Sound like somebody licked the red off Tony's candy. He's pretty wound up there, isn't he?
No, listen, Tommy, I don't like losing. I mean,
I know,
listen,
I don't either.
Trust me, as mad as I am, I promise you the players are more frustrated and more mad. I mean, that's one thing we have to realize as fans and as the jobs we do, we get frustrated, but the 53 guys in that locker room are more upset, more mad, more frustrated, more tired, and think losing sucks more than we do. And so just don't take what us being upset or me being mad thinking, oh, they're not. They're more mad. I mean, that's just...
No, I understand. And I'm glad they are upset because we are too, but we still got hope. Hey, listen, I'm going to try to squeeze in two questions if you let me. One of them determines if I understand the rule correctly. If you win the coin toss at the beginning of the game, you've got one of three options. You could either take the ball, decide what goal you want to defend, or defer to the second half. Is that true?
Yes.
All right, so if the second half comes in, you defer, now you have two choices. You can either take the ball or take the goal you want to defend. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, if that's true, why, when they took the ball at the second half of that game, why wouldn't we have put the wind in our back for the fourth quarter rather than the third
great
quarter?
Great question. That's a great question.
Very good question.
It was
you know
a screw-up.
We don't have an answer.
Well, no, it was a screw-up.
By who?
Whoever makes that decision.
Well, that's the head coach.
It was a screw-up.
But I mean,
yeah,
every
no.
team I've been on, the head coach makes that.
I talked to somebody who told me that that was a special teams mistake, that they should have done it differently.
All right, can I squeeze in one more question?
Sure.
To you think that when the score was 20-16 and we was kicking to, you know, Turk's demise there when he kicked it, you think there was any thought of going back to the end zone and downing the ball and giving them 2 points and then you get to kick a ball from the 20?
No, you
not at that point of the game.
And you'd hope your kicker would boot it out to the 50.
Yeah, not the way he was kicking either.
Well, I mean, it was probably in the lesser of the two evils.
Well, I mean, Tommy, in hindsight, I mean, yeah.
But then you're making it a 2-point game rather than a 4.
Yeah,
you're
that becomes a field goal. You know, so no, you wouldn't want to do it. But I mean, that, you know, if you could go back
and
in time,
in hindsight, they probably wouldn't have signed
Matt
Turk.
Yeah, you keep going back.
Yeah, published though here. If you can go all the way back,
right.
Bottom line is, you know, I mean, Jack can't make that call with that much time left and tell Turk. I mean, he has, as the head coach, he has to have confidence in the players that he's got on the field. They're going to do their job.
No, John had it right. I mean, you know, you can't give up two and then make it a 2-point.
No,
game.
I 100% agree.
Appreciate the phone call, Tommy. We are due for news here at the bottom of the hour. Jaguars this week rolls on 90 more minutes of this program from EverBank Field in Jacksonville. After this, on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, we are back on Jaguars This Week from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351, at Tony Buscelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. Here's one for you guys. Should the Jaguars change punt returners, and why hasn't Shorts made an impact at wide receiver?
Well, I thought that during the game that they would make a change because it was pretty clear with the conditions and the wind that he was hesitant at fielding the ball, and I thought that should have been done in the game. Now, as far as this game goes, I would have Mike Thomas ready to go. I would start out with the young guy one more time, Cecil, and see how he handles the first one, and if he has one misstep, he's out.
What's the story with him as a receiver? You watch the tape, and I think you've even said that he just – doesn't appear to have it all
yet. Games ago, it appeared that he didn't know where he needed to be. And that's a problem. You know, if the quarterback is expecting you to be at spot A and you're at spot B and C and D, it doesn't work. You know, you're not going to get the ball. And he's got to get better at that. Now, I didn't really pay much attention to him because he was never really a targeted receiver this past game, so I didn't watch him real close. I was really focusing on Blaine. In his throws and offensive line with all the mixing and matching that they did. But he's got to start producing. I mean, he's one of those guys that's got to start putting something up in the stat column.
How much is he hampered by having a first-year wide receivers coach?
Well, I don't know who's responsible for what because we're not at practice. Well, I don't know if it's wide receiver coach, coordinator, whatever.
It's just a fact. You've got a first-year wide receivers coach.
The bottom line is for whatever reason, it looks like to me, and I'm not a passing game expert, that our receivers, more often than not, are on top of each other, or the spacing is not very good, one. Number two, we do not run the most crisp routes. Coming out of breaks, the out routes, they look like they're rounded. Very poor are in routes, which makes it much more difficult on Blaine. I'm not giving him a complete pass, but when you round an in route, the timing's off. It doesn't look like we finish routes. It looks like guys are jogging at times when, you know, maybe they don't think the ball's coming to them. Very poor. And, you know, at the end of the day, the responsibility of every – and it's the coach and the players. I mean, you have to – as a player, you have to take personal accountability. This is your job. And then it's your position coach to be up your backside, making sure you're doing your job and you're being coached the right thing and being taught the right thing, and it is being demanded of you to do the right thing. And then it's the head coach who demands the position coach to make sure that happens. And so it's – I mean, that's how every football team I've ever been on or know about, that's how it works. So who's accountable? Everybody's accountable when you're not winning. And the receivers, they're not producing. And there's not a lot of separation. And there's sloppy routes. And it's sloppy. And I don't know if it's the scheme. Maybe they're supposed to be in the same place where one guy can cover them. I mean, or what?
I doubt that.
But it just looks very sloppy. I mean, Jeff, do you see the same thing?
It's the route's got to be better. The receiver's got to be better. Oh. They got to be coached better. I mean,
and you got to catch the ball when you're going across the middle. I mean, come on.
You know,
you got to catch the ball.
Well, Tony, touching on that, you know, I said before the game,
repeatedly,
when you have players, you want to have players play to their strengths.
Absolutely. That's a coach's job to help them, put them in the best position to succeed.
Jason Hill is not a guy that likes to be in traffic with the ball.
That was obvious.
You know, whether you want to say that, you know, oh, he's got short arms or he's scared going across middle, whatever.
It doesn't matter why.
He's still a good receiver on the perimeter and deep, okay? And so to ask him again to come in and run quick slants, I was kind of going, wait a minute, if that's not what he does well, then, you know, you don't really want to have him do it. You know, have him do what he does best. And I think, what has he had, two or three drops this year on quick slants?
Three.
And I'm not sure he's had any on anything else. I mean, that's pretty much what he's dropped.
So if you keep running him on the slant, he's going to keep dropping the ball because it's not what he does.
He's good down the field and on the perimeter.
Three times. I mean, it's
very astute.
Yes.
Observation.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we got to boil
it
down to very basics.
You're the pro.
Well, that's why I sit here and just direct traffic. 355 NFL 1-800.
It's the old saying.
355-6351.
What's insanity, Brian?
The very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
I think that's what Jeff's talking about with the slant route.
Okay. Was that you hitting your head on purpose or by accident? Okay.
Yeah, that was.
All right, so here we go. Stan's in Orange Park. Stan, Good luck. What's going on? Stan. 3, 2, 1. Goodbye, Stan. Greg on the west side. What's going on, Greg?
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good.
I got to tell you, on weekend, I didn't get to see the Bengals game in person. I have season tickets, but Friday, I suffered a massive heart attack.
Ooh.
And fortunately, I was not able to get to the game because of that. But I sat in my, I laid in my ICU suite at the hospital and watched my Jags from front to finish on Sunday, loyally. And I can tell you, there was a lot of marks of greatness, a lot of frustration, but we were very close. And the fans just got to keep faith, man. If I can, I had a life-altering experience on Friday. I can tell you, if I can keep the faith as a fan, I need other fans to do it too, man. We just got to keep the faith because it's coming soon.
Greg, you doing okay,
man? I'm going to get through. I'm at home now and had a few procedures done, and they fixed a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to have to make some serious lifestyle changes that aren't going to allow me to tailgate a lot, but I'm going to make it through. I'll be okay, and I'll be at the Monday night game.
Hang in there. We need more fans like you.
Did you say you're going to be at the Monday night game?
I will be there at the Monday night game in my full teal gear.
Well, just take it easy.
So I will see you guys there, man. Y'all have a good night.
Hey, Greg, hang on the line for just a minute,
hang
okay?
Hang on. We're going to try and work something for you here. Just to, you're a season ticket holder. You went through that. Hang with us.
Great call.
All right.
That's awesome.
And wish you the best.
Yep. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And no more excuses. You better not come with one now.
Oh, my goodness.
You better not. Do not bring that nonsense now.
I think Tony might be next.
With what?
Heart attack.
Thanks. My family appreciates that.
The way you're in here.
My wife and five kids hope you're wrong.
I hope I am, too.
Or at least they hope he made the life insurance payment.
Either way, they're fine. That's NFL Angie. She's fine with that part.
Yeah, exactly.
You're pretty worked up is all I'm getting at.
I think we got Stan from Orange Park up next. Stan, how are you?
Fine. How you doing?
Good. What's going on tonight?
Hey, I wanted to ask Jeff. You know, I heard this year that we were going to have a quote-unquote attacking defense. And on third down and 18, I didn't see any kind of pressure, and I think that would have maybe even turned the game in the beginning. I mean, they throw a touchdown, you let the guy stand back there all dang day instead of putting pressure. And they talk about the pressure defense, but I don't see anything like the Steelers getting on the line or any of those teams that really put pressure. And I just wanted to ask Jeff what his take was on that.
Well, on the third and 17, first off about saying that you thought they were going to be an attacking defense, they wanted to attack with four. And that I think that was made pretty clear in that they said going into the season with the lockout and everything, their goal was to keep things simple so they could be fast. And that was – I think pretty well understood.
That was the whole philosophy.
The way they were going to play. On the third and 17, there was nothing wrong with the defense that they called. There was just a breakdown in coverage. Rasheem bit on the inside guy, and he was a deep quarter player. That's his responsibility, and you'd like to think that on a veteran guy like Rasheem won't make that mistake. That was disappointing because
he got sucked into the hash player, he took a step inside and got
a safety sitting right there. Yeah,
the wheel route beat him.
The receiver was going to run right into him.
Was that cover four, Jeff, or three?
It was quarters. It was quarter, half. You know, so you got Rasheem's covering 25% of the depth of the field on that side, and then the safety's got the other 25%, and then the safety on the other side's got half a field.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, that was all on Rasheem.
It was the perfect coverage.
If it's covered, maybe, you know, there's a play made somewhere else. But, I mean, I don't want this team. They're not good enough in the back end stand to play an attacking Pittsburgh man coverage, zone blitz style of defense. I don't think they're good enough in the back end to do that. And certainly now, with Derek Cox being out, Middleton in, and at some point in the game, Dwight Lowry came out, and then you had Kevin Rutland in at corner, and Middleton moves over to nickel. You just can't do that.
And to even go a step further, a lot of teams on third and 15-plus will rush sometimes just three and drop eight in coverage and just try to keep everything in front of them and come up and tackle because you're just trying to get the team to kick the field goal or punt.
Right. The odds on a 20-yard pass go up so much the more
Who did New Orleans guys when New Orleans played
the more aggressive you are, the
when New Orleans are. Played somebody this year, it was like a 2-minute drill or something. Greg Williams is just bringing the house. And all of a sudden, they had a very similar situation. It was like third and 15. Well, they bring the pressure, you know, man up, zeroed up, and what happens? Boom, big play.
Over the top. Right. It's actually the right play to drop seven or eight there, in my opinion. You keep everything in front of you. If you don't have the blown coverage, most likely he checks it down to a back or someone underneath. Guys come up and make a tackle. They kick a field goal. They get 3 points.
You can always nitpick any play that goes for a touchdown because
– Went for a touchdown.
Right, went for a touchdown. But I think overall through five games, the defensive approach has been pretty solid.
I mean, you can't complain, I don't think, about anything right. with the defense. I mean, holy cow. I mean, to hold, what, four out of five opponents under 300 yards. They kept the Jaguars in the game. When special teams were atrocious, I mean,
they've played well enough to be in every game.
Absolutely.
I think they're playing winning football.
Yeah.
I mean, defensively, I mean, you talk about the jump that they've made from last year to this year is tremendous. Tremendous, and I give Mel Tucker a lot of credit.
Yeah, you give Mel and that defensive staff a ton of credit.
And on that note, I mean, I know we're not talking positives tonight because, you know, you've lost four in a row. There's been a lot of criticism for them not going after a wide receiver in free agency. But if you look at the NFL in the last 10-15 years since free agency started, massive free agency signings often lead to disaster. The free agency signings that the Jaguars did in August for the defense, it's been a pretty good move. You know, the moves were very
good.
Right.
I'd say really good,
and that's rare. And that's rare. So you got to give some of these guys credit, because Lesney, Landry, these guys who have come in, more often than not, huge moves like that lead to disaster. That part of it, at least, has worked very well. So somebody has to get, there's a lot of blame being thrown around. On that front, at least, somebody did the right thing.
What big name receiver were they supposed to go after, too?
There wasn't one.
I had an argument with that some of the other day. They said, we should have got a receiver. I'm like, who?
People also wanted the cornerback from the Eagles, and he's been terrible. Yeah. So, I mean.
Someone said T.O. Yeah. I'm like, T.O.
Well,
sure. 90.
And people said Braylon Edwards.
He's done nothing. Go look what Braylon Edwards does.
And they'll throw all that stuff out at you. But
none
there
of them
wasn't
did anything.
One. No. The best receivers in the league are on the teams that drafted them.
That's right. Just. Wait. That's the kind of position it is.
355-NFL1. At Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. We'll take this break, come back, and finish up hour number one right after this on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. For those who thought the Jaguars should sign him,
great signing.
Four catches, 48 yards.
Yeah, he's been hurt.
He'd make a huge impact.
He's been hurt, and he's got some legal issues hanging over the top of him. So, I mean, that's not the type of sign you want to make in free agency.
Nope.
I mean, one guy people throw out there is Sidney Rice, but he had an injury that scared a lot of people off.
Big hip injury.
And only a couple teams went after.
And he hasn't done much.
He's been okay. I mean, he has, 220, 230 yards. I mean, not great. The fact remains, it's just not a position that people are going to give up if they have an impact guy.
Sidney Rice does not have any more production than Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas has 23 catches for 265 yards.
Right,
I mean, it's just.
Well, and he's got to be better, too. I mean, he had two drops in the game. And that's why, that game, we'd have had Dwight Lowry on All Access Monday night. And I'd made the comment to him, this is a game that you really can't have any one group, whether it be offense, defense, or special teams, pointing a finger at one another. Because, I mean, everybody could have made plays to make a difference in that ball game, and it didn't happen. Offense, defense could have made a big stop on two fourth downs.
Right.
Offensively, take your pick. I mean, some of those bad punts by Matt Turk in the second half were preceded by three and out non-first down offensive drives that could have at least maybe changed the field position in that game a little bit, and it didn't happen.
Just punch the ball in twice when you have it inside the 5-yard line first and goal.
And Mercedes has got to make that catch. I mean, one of your big-time players has got to make that catch.
I agree. I mean, you'd like to make a great catch. It could have been thrown a little bit more on target. That's where the footwork.
He's supposed to make that catch.
No, I agree with that. Oh, you're talking about the one up high. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. The second one
was not a good throw.
That's what I was talking about. I'm sorry. You're absolutely.
That was the second drive.
The one you go up, he's got to come down with that. Right. I mean, that's what you pay.
And in fairness to Mercedes, he's a stand-up guy.
I know he gets tired of
everybody saying stand-up guy. But Mercedes, he was distraught, and he knew it wasn't the play. I didn't have a problem with that play call. We've gotten a lot of emails this week saying, why don't you just run when you're down there? I don't think you can run every play inside the 5-yard line. You have to mix it up a little
bit. We might as well, listen, I think I've been as critical as anybody.
No.
But you can't second guess every call.
Right.
I mean, just because it doesn't score a touchdown, you shouldn't have done the opposite.
Right.
Because guess what? If they would have run the ball three times, they'd be like, why are we so conservative? Why aren't we throwing the ball?
They lost 7 yards on a run right after the Lewis drop. So, I mean,
you can't do that. I mean, I was fine with the play calling. I mean, no problem with it at all. You got it. It's the execution.
And Lewis got blown up on that. On that that run stuff, yeah. Right? I mean, that doesn't happen to him very much.
You know, when Mercedes, what, he came back because he hurt his calf against...
He didn't play against the Jets.
Came
back against Carolina.
And didn't block particularly well. And I said, okay, pass, calf, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. He has not been blocking as good as he did last year.
Not like he has in the past.
You know, he's got to step his level of play up.
He's not holding the point. I noticed the same thing, Jeff. In the run game, he used to be able to take a defensive end and hold the point and take away all leverage.
Take him away, period.
Yeah, take away the leverage of the defense. And now it almost looks like a stalemate's a win, and he's getting pushed back at times, which really hurts you in the counter game that the Jags want to run because all of a sudden now that guard can't get around, gets into a lot of traffic because of the penetration. So he is –
Is that a calf? I mean, can a calf
I don't know if it's injury-related or not.
No idea. But it could. But could it be a calf? If it's a calf, yeah, you'd lose your driving power. And right. Listen, Mercedes has been, since he got here, a dominating blocker. So you don't lose that all of a sudden. So maybe it's a calf issue. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, don't know. But along the same lines, I do want to throw out some credit here to that offensive line because they really had to have two different units to play in that ball game when Eugene Monroe ended up coming out of that game. And they never missed a beat. I mean, I thought they were strong with Eugene in there. I thought otherwise Eugene had one bad set that gave up, you know, the sack to what Frosty Rucker, I believe
it was Frosty.
And then the one bad set Rackley made,
Rackley gave up one play. But I mean, other than that, I thought the off, you know, Meester snap.
Give Britton,
but they were good.
Britton and Whimper, I give a ton of credit to because to be able to move around like that, right to left. Left to right, guard to tackle.
That's hard to do.
I mean, it's not easy. Those guys, I mean, that's, I mean, I agree. Hats off. I mean, you know, what exactly happened on the snap? I mean, I heard Brad took the blame, Blaine took the blame, everyone took the blame, and not being around.
Blaine was trying to check
off. Was he trying to audible?
Yep, based on a coverage that he saw, which appeared to be a zeroed-up coverage, which means, you know, you've got some opportunities.
Center field's wide open.
Play.
Absolutely.
And I think Brad... I'm not trying to be a psychologist here, but, you know, a couple of weeks ago in Carolina, there was, 1 to 11 seconds that ran off the clock there at the end that cost you an opportunity at the win in which he didn't snap the ball. So he had to have that in his mind, the sense that we've got to get this ball snapped. The clock is running. And he heard something that was wrong, and he snapped it.
I mean, I'm not excusing it. But I've jumped off sides because I thought I heard something. It was, you know, the opposing team barking out something or someone making it. Because you got a hair trigger at that point.
And you could tell that, you know, the offensive line appeared to be ready, but Mercedes, the tight end, was coming into the formation. You know, so clearly there was an audible in progress.
And the receivers, if you watch the receivers, they were looking in still.
So they were all trying to make sure they got the play and making the adjustments. And even some of the offensive linemen were quite ready.
Yeah. Something Maurice said this week, too, that, you know, he said what was impressive is that Blaine was getting into the right check at that point. And he said that's an area where Blaine is, you know, continuing to get better is us seeing that and getting them into the right play. And, you know, so he, you know, that's something that Maurice said he was encouraged with Gabbert.
That just killed me. I hated that for Brad. Only because he's the only guy left that I played with. And yeah. I hate seeing that happen because, you know, it is what it is, though. I know he felt probably worse than anybody.
All right. Time for news at the top of the hour. One more hour. We'll look forward to the Steelers in hour two of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Live from Everbank Field. You got me there, Pacelli. All right, now are you ready to turn the conversation to This Week in Pittsburgh?
Whatever. I'm ready for whatever.
All right.
I'm excited. I'm hopeful again. We're going to be about the NFL.
From 1 hour to the next.
One day to the next, man. You got to put it behind you. It's our 24-hour rule. It's our first hour is...
is the old 24?
Old 24, and now it's the new
24.
We're looking forward.
New
All
week. Right. So, Pittsburgh.
Love, you know, excited. We got to play better. We got to, we better run the ball this week. And because Dick LeBeau is going to unleash. I mean, they do every week, but with a rookie quarterback, they're going to give him every look. And I think it's the first time that he'll see a 3-4, true 3-4. I guess the Jets played some 3-4.
Yeah, he saw some of that stuff at the Jets, but I mean,
but he wasn't the starter
of the game.
And so you're going to see a true 3-4 zone blitzing scheme that will bring the safety as much as they bring the sandbacker, will bring, you know, is going to bring four to a side, drop the defensive end, run cover two over the top when you think, you know, you got it covered. I mean, it's going to be a very I only can state it from playing these guys every year, twice a year, and playing left tackle, my head being spinning at times and not even be the quarterback with just my responsibility, understanding where the pressure is coming from based on what protection, who do I have to be responsible for, because now it's not just linebackers you bring into the secondary.
Troy Polamalu.
I mean, and so I say all that. It's going to be Blaine's biggest test, which it is for every quarterback. So you have to run the ball. You got to run the ball. You cannot afford to get in third and long situations or even really second and long, because that's another big blitz down where they're going to come after you.
Yeah, because, Tony, going back to you know, your days against Pittsburgh, I mean, Dick LeBeau's been there forever.
Forever.
And the style of defense hasn't changed that much, and that when they're on first and second and fairly short, it's not a complicated defense.
No, it's
defense.
Your base 3-4 defense. That's
base
when you
3-4,
can win.
There's no surprises. You know where they're going to be. You know where to block. Like Tony said, when you get in third and long, all of a sudden you might end up having only two down guys, and then you got four linebackers out there, and then all the defensive backs, and then you don't know who's going to come. That's when it gets really difficult for a quarterback.
And so don't you have to throw someone first down early against these guys too?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you have to take advantage of the base looks.
Right.
And you can sometimes, and I don't know if they're still doing it, you can get them into situations early in the down where you bring in your – a lot of times in your three wide package, they'll stay base personnel because they want to stay in that base. And you can get some matchup advantages of early downs. And if you can stay on schedule and down and distance, you can take advantage of some situations with the Steelers.
And they got some injury issues.
They do.
James Harrison's not going to play. What they did in his absence, they took Timmons, who's normally inside, moved him outside.
How did he play, Jeff? I didn't see
that. He's not an outside backer. The week before against Houston, they actually brought in Jason Worlds. Second-year guy out of Virginia Tech who was a second-round pick, and he looked pretty good.
He got hurt, didn't he?
Yeah, I guess he got hurt. And so this past week against Tennessee, they took Larry Foote, put him in the middle, move Lawrence Timmons to the outside. And Lawrence Timmons is not a threat to rush. So that's a good thing. They also didn't have Aaron Smith available. McFadden,
and he's not going to play this week either.
McFadden is still on demand at corner, although he did play last week, but he didn't start. So they've got some issues there.
They're not playing the run particularly well this year either. I mean, they're not playing as well as they were last year. So I read that somebody wrote it'd be one of the biggest upsets in NFL history, the Jaguars going
in.
No. I don't think it's – you know, this is not the overwhelming situation a lot of people make it out to be.
Two guys,
doesn't have to be anyway.
Two guys have had big days against them. Arian Foster had 155, and Ray Rice had 107.
I did the first game of the year that Ray Rice, and they gashed him. I mean, they just pushed him around the entire game. Casey Hampton was on the ground a lot.
He's played better.
Is he playing better?
Yeah, I watched 2 weeks ago, because he didn't play last week against Tennessee, but 2 weeks ago against Houston, he's back at his game.
Okay. And so they got pushed around because of that.
Who's the center in Houston? He's a pretty good player. 55.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I can't think of his name, but good player. And Aaron Smith is not playing up to his – and I know he's out, but that's some – they're getting old on defense. I think it's 8 of their 11 starters are over 30.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that they haven't gotten some of these young guys.
Like
Ziggy
Hood.
Hood is a good player.
And a lot of people you talk to, I think Ziggy Hood – they want Ziggy Hood to be the every
I think
the
he's
starter.
Better.
Yeah, he's better than
he's
Aaron
probably
Smith.
Probably better than Aaron Smith. And then their first-round pick, Cameron Hayward.
Yep.
Has been getting a lot of snaps lately. Got his first sack against Tennessee. He looks good. So it looks like Pittsburgh is starting to restock the shelves.
They're really weak. And so offensively, you got to run the ball. Just take the pressure off the quarterback. I mean, I think I don't care really who your quarterback is. You don't want to get in a bunch of situations. Unless you can spread them out, which if you watch what the Patriots do, or if you have a really experienced quarterback, you can spread them out and make them declare what they want to do and then take advantage of some of their blitzing schemes because you'll get them on islands. We're not there yet. I mean, I don't think Blaine's ready for that. And that's no slight against him. So you got to run the ball, take advantage of some situations. And then on defense is really, I think, where you can dominate, because this offensive line for the Steelers is not very good.
Yeah, before we go there, watching, going back and watching the Houston game, there was a point in the game where Arian Foster had a long run.
22-yard touchdown.
And kind of did like a little gesture on his way to the end zone. And after that, it was like somebody just crossed the wires in Troy Polamalu's head. And from that play, in which Arian Foster taunted the DB on the way to the end zone, Polamalu was on a mission to seek and destroy Arian Foster. It was unbelievable to watch.
Well, and I didn't watch the Steelers tape of last week, but going into the week, there was a lot of talk about Polamalu being done, not playing very well, and I was told that he basically came out and dominated the game.
It was amazing.
Against the Titans. He basically said, let me show you how much football I've left.
Oh, it was amazing how dominant he was against the Texans.
I mean, let's not completely put these Steelers to bed that they're no good. They're still one of the top three defenses in the NFL.
Yeah. No, they're ranked second this week.
I mean, so they're
– Here's the thing, though.
They're not terrible.
No, here's the thing, though. They don't have the takeaways that they normally do.
Right.
They have one interception. They have one fumble recovery. And uncharacteristically, the Steelers going into week six are minus 10.
And that's why they're losing. And a lot of that's on the offensive side of the ball. Well, defensively, obviously, they're not getting turnovers, but their offensive line has really struggled. I mean,
9 different guys have started a game on the offensive line.
And Ben has been getting killed. He's beat up. He has a foot injury. He already holds the ball a long time because that's his style of play. Now it's a porous offensive line. They can't run the ball. Mendenhall has the hamstring he's nursing. I mean, that's where you have to take advantage of them. Now, all those same things were being said about them going into the Tennessee Titan game. And like most champions, most really good teams, they get a little bit upset when you start talking about them poorly. And they have a little bit of let me show you attitude. And all Ben did is throw the ball all over the place. And they went up and down the field
on the Titans.
Yeah, you got to find a way to take advantage of that offensive line.
You got to rush the passer.
If you don't, then holy cow, Mike Wallace, he is amazing.
Have you seen that?
He might be the fastest person in the NFL.
Yeah.
Four consecutive games with a reception of 40 yards or greater.
Well, Mike Wallace can fly, Emmanuel Sanders can fly, and Antonio Brown can fly. And then you have Hines Ward, who wants to start a fight every play.
And so, he's good at what he does.
And he's very good at what he does. And so, listen, they got some talent outside.
How much do you get from Aaron Campman? If he plays 15 to 20 snaps this week, how much do you get?
That's a great question, but nobody knows.
Right.
How much I'm trying to phrase it differently. Let's say that he plays well. Not great. Let's say he plays well.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do for this front? You know, what can you do with Matt Roth?
It would be tremendous. Going to Matt Roth for a minute, I mean, the last two games since he came back from a neck, he hadn't been very good. Matt Roth's got to pick it up. You know, and you would think or hope that Aaron Campman going back into the lineup and he would be matched up for the most part against a rookie. Their, second-round pick out of
Marcus
Florida?
Marcus Gilbert.
I mean, that you would like to think that Aaron would be able to have some success against him and put the heat on Ben. You know, getting Ben off the spot is one thing, but bringing him down is another.
That's true.
You remember here in 08 when you had Paul Spicer and John Henderson draped over him on 3rd and 13?
And still made that throw.
Rifled it to Hines Ward.
Well, let me ask you a question.
On the go-ahead drive.
And maybe no one knows this. How is his knee responding in practice? Is there any reports, any leaks? I mean, is he explosive?
Nobody knows.
That goes a long way to how is he going to play.
Haven't heard.
I mean, you got early. How does he look in the early warm-ups? Hard to tell.
Yeah, there's nothing you can say in the early warm-ups. He, you know, all you really get out of anybody is that he's, you know, say he's making progress, and I would look for him to play, you know, mainly passing situations, 20, 25 plays. But as far as how he's playing, I don't think anybody knows until Sunday.
I think 20-25 might be high.
Yeah, Jack told me earlier today when we were taping his television show, 15-20.
Okay,
that was probably about the extent of it. But you know, if he's playing well, what that might mean? What? Won't even go there. It's too much speculation. But just having him in the rotation
helps.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like hopefully he can provide some kind of lift from the left end spot because they need it. And Jeremy Mincy continues, you know, to harass and make plays. Because Jeremy Mincy against this team out here on Sunday was good.
John Chick had some nice rushes as well.
John Chick did pretty good. And Max Starks, you know, just got signed and was inserted in the starting lineup against Tennessee. You know, Tennessee's not exactly world beaters on the edge anymore.
Right.
You know, so I don't think he was tested. And if you put somebody out there like Jeremy Minson, I think Max Starks is going to have his hands full.
355-NFL-1-800-355-6351. At Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. We take this break and come back more on News Talk WOKB. Depend on it.
Hey.
All right, so here's a thought for you. Who wins the AFC South?
Oh, you know. No Mario Williams, no Andre Johnson for Houston for a while. No Mario for the year.
Did he get put on IR?
Yeah, today they put him on IR. Right now?
Yeah, I mean,
the favorite is probably Tennessee.
Nah, it's still Houston.
Nah, it's still Houston.
I'm telling you.
That offense that they have and two backs that they have, it's still Houston.
Jeff, they have no wide receiver threat right now at all. They just traded for Derek Mason because they need somebody to go catch the ball.
Yeah, but that they
Derek
got.
Derek Mason is.
They'll have Andre Johnson back.
Yeah, when he gets. Yeah.
Owen Daniels is top notch. Top notch tight end.
My only thing with the Texans is they have broken every expert's heart.
True.
Every year.
So you're scared?
I am scared.
But somebody has to win the division, don't they?
Well, that's why I said Tennessee. I don't like them either. Don't get me wrong.
Nah, Tennessee's got no shot. No shot. Indianapolis has got no shot. I mean, this team right now. Boy, it's so hard to say they got a shot. But
here's why I ask.
I mean, holy cow, this is when you want this team to be good. You know, you want to see them.
We
should be better than what they are.
The Titans are off this week, okay? But the Texans go to Baltimore.
3-3.
And then they come home and host the Titans. And then they host the Jaguars. So the next 3 weeks will tell the story for the Titans.
But could you imagine, though, how different the feel would be if they won it at Carolina? This team won at Carolina.
And beat Cincinnati. You're 3-2.
And you're sitting there going, they're the lead dog.
You certainly like their chances.
You're right there with Houston. But here's the thing. These ifs, and we were not supposed to go back. We've turned the page.
Well, I just think when you look at the division as a whole, it's worse.
This is where – but we have to stop saying if this and if that. You are what your record says you are. We're a 1-4 team right now that has to play better. And so we can't start talking and saying, man, if we had to beat these guys and we had to beat these guys, we'd be 3-2. Because I promise you right now, Tennessee's going, well, we should have beat Jacksonville opening day. And, you know,
we got hammered by Pittsburgh.
We'd be 4-1. I can't believe we lost Jacksonville. I mean, you can't do that in the NFL because then every team starts going down that path. I mean, Houston.
This is the
NFC
West.
I was just living in that moment for a minute.
Well,
this team being 3-2.
I mean, Houston could do it with New Orleans. They should have beat New Orleans.
You just
give Jeff that much.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted a minute.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I gave you like 30 seconds.
You have a real interesting situation in the AFC South.
Yes.
You could have an NFC West here in 11.
Good.
I don't think 7-9 wins.
Okay. But Mario Williams is gone, and
9-7 though could.
Andre Johnson, that's hamstring surgery.
You don't know when he's going back.
You don't.
9-7 could win this division.
10 wins. Going to take 10.
I don't know, Jeff. Who gets the 10? First to 10 wins. I'll tell you. I mean, the Colts are not getting to 10.
No.
There's not a chance. They might not get to 10 in 2 years if Peyton doesn't come back.
Boy, they just have put player after player on injured reserve. I mean, they're done.
The fact that they didn't beat Kansas City at home, that's...
Well, and with what, 24-3 lead or 20? I mean,
yeah,
they were up big in that game. Or 23-7 lead, I guess it was. But, yeah, that's a...
couldn't finish the job.
I did not think that they would finish with the worst record. When that result came in, they might.
Could they go 0-16?
No. They would not go 0-16.
What was that?
What'd you say?
I mean, there are games in their schedule they can win.
Oh.
Hold on, I'm looking.
Well, I mean, you'd say that you know, there's... I mean, heck, anybody can say that nobody's going to go 0-16.
Lions did.
The Lions did. I did those games that year.
Lions did.
I was on the Lions crew, Fox crew.
All right, just for fun. Here are the Colts, right? They're at Cincy this week.
Okay.
Are they 0-6?
Yeah, they're not beating Cincinnati.
At New Orleans.
Oh, no chance.
There's no chance.
All right, so 0-7. At Tennessee.
They could win.
I don't think so because they can't stop the run.
Yeah, Chris Johnson is junk.
Right is he now, really junk? Yeah,
right now, Tony, if you could watch
I haven't him watched him
against Pittsburgh.
Just junk.
Laying down.
All right. I don't think they beat Tennessee in Tennessee. They could beat Tennessee in Indy, but I don't think they beat Tennessee in Tennessee.
All right. Atlanta.
No, no chance.
Jacksonville.
Not a chance. They will no way they will beat us.
Well, that's good. All right.
I got to be a fan at some point.
I get you. No, I get you.
I got to put my fan.
Peyton Manning's out.
I got to put my fan. I mean, listen, we play well.
That team can't beat this team. No way.
No way. We play well with them when they have Peyton Manning. I mean, we will beat them. We'll beat them.
I worry about scoring 11 points a game.
They'll score 9 then. We will beat them twice this year.
Okay. Carolina.
Where is it?
At Lucas Oil.
They could beat Carolina because they could get after at that place. Dwight Freeney has a big game. Rattle. You know, the rookie quarterback throws at the wrong team. They could beat Carolina.
At New England. At Baltimore.
No.
Tennessee at home.
Yeah, they can win that too.
Houston at home.
No.
And then at Jacksonville.
No. I see them win. There's like 3 winnable games on that schedule for them. Maybe 4.
Okay. So you throw them out of the competition.
The luck?
Yes.
Competition?
Yes.
They're in luck's competition. They are racing for Andrew Luck.
And boy, that sets up a
the
really
question is,
really
do they pick?
Dilemma.
Yeah, do they pick on Andrew Luck?
Because heck yeah,
you have to.
I don't know if they do though. Because
well, come on,
oh, come on, John.
Should they? Yes.
We got a quarterback that has a nerve damage that might never play again.
I agree.
Doesn't cost a lot for a first round pick anymore.
Got
quarterback,
but
absolutely.
If Peyton's right and you're going to sit Luck for 4 years,
I just got done. If I'm Jim Irsay, I just got done paying Peyton Manning what $24-25 million
a year.
To sit in the coach's box.
Logically, I agree with
you. You think I'm worried about drafting
Luck? I know
it
would be a
tougher
decision than what you guys think.
No. How old Peyton?
34.
No,
35.
No, 35. I thought he's 36.
I think he's 35.
Okay, 35. So, fully healthy. So, he's going to be 36 next year.
I don't care if he was fully healthy.
I'm just saying, you might have 3 years left. You got to take Luck. There's no way you don't take Andrew Luck.
Be like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the Packers took Rodgers 23rd.
So?
So there wasn't as much pressure to play him.
There will be no pressure.
There's not
going
to be any
Manning.
Pressure to play him over Peyton Manning. No way.
You're going to take the number one overall pick.
Yes.
Play him 4 years and have him sign somewhere else?
No, not
4 years.
First of all, Peyton's not playing 4 more years.
That's it. Okay.
And then you try to get something for Peyton
Trade
while
Peyton.
You can get it.
Trade Peyton.
You're darn right.
Colts.com says he's 35.
So he'll be 36.
Is that a reputable place?
They're probably right.
You wouldn't trade
at
Peyton
one point
Manning
in time
as the general manager?
I would. They won't.
You don't think they would?
Irsay won't allow. Irsay
really?
Will not trade Peyton Manning.
I
would be stunned.
Who could you trade him to?
He obviously never read the book, The Unemotional Investor.
I would be stunned if he plays a game.
He obviously has not, Jeff.
True.
You might want to send it to him.
Logic, I agree with you guys. I would be stunned if he plays a game in another uniform.
Well, that's fine. Whether he plays, I don't care.
Tony
you
said he was going to play.
I missed that one by a little bit. You got to draft Andrew Luck.
I
have major
I
issues.
Agree with you, but I don't think it'll be as easy a decision.
How many winless teams are there right now?
Three. Miami, St. Louis, and Indy.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's
Miami's
right.
Miami's not going to win a game.
They might.
Go look at their schedule. They will not.
They play a tough division.
Oh, my goodness. Their best chance of winning
Buffalo.
They better beat Denver.
Jets and New England in that division. Woo.
They better beat Denver with Tebow starting that first game in Miami next week, a week from this Sunday coming up.
All right, let's look at the Miami Dolphins. And then someone's going to call us and ask us to do this for the Jaguar schedule.
I think the Jags win the rest of them.
That's what it'll take. At New York.
Why are you in your head?
At the Jets.
I hope they do.
I do too.
At the Jets.
They're not beating the Jets.
All right. Denver at home.
That's the game they can win.
At the Giants.
It's Tim Tebow.
They're not beating the Giants.
Tim Tebow, Denver. You think they can beat Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos?
Man, you're stirring it up now.
You're trying to stir it up.
At Kansas City.
No, they could beat Kansas City. They're terrible.
Washington.
No.
Buffalo.
No.
At Dallas.
No.
Oakland.
No.
Philadelphia.
No.
At Buffalo.
No.
At New England.
No.
The New York Jets.
No. They have like 2 games they can win. And they're a bad team. Right. I've done them too.
So maybe Luck ends up in South Florida.
Could he could be the next Dan Marino?
I would bet on that before any of the others. I think that I think the Colts.
But if you had,
really,
let me ask you this, John: if you're the Colts and you have the first overall pick,
I pick Luck, no question. I'm saying I don't think
you're
it's
telling
be
me that they would
them.
Trade out of that spot because there would be a million teams wanting to get into that spot.
I think it will be a tougher call than you guys believe.
And that's all because of Irsay?
Yeah.
Why?
Loves to him, Peyton Manning is his legacy. He's the franchise, he's everything. So I would just be surprised.
Vince Lombardi once went down as the coach of the Green Bay Packers because he wouldn't cut Fuzzy Thurston and Jerry Kramer and those old guys. And they got bad and they put him in the GM office, and he hated it, and he went to Washington and died. But I mean, that was the end of Vince Lombardi.
Obviously,
was
Vince didn't read that emotional investor.
Yeah, well, and people that have analyzed Vince Lombardi over the years, they know that he could not bring himself, tough guy as he was, to cut those great Packers.
But
and they got old.
But that's probably that characteristic of loyalty, and
made him special.
Made him the coach he was at the same time. I mean, sometimes our greatest
but when the time
our
comes,
greatest strength can be our greatest weakness.
Absolutely. All right, we're time for we've got time now. Take news at the bottom of the hour. Come back. More after this on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it.
Team.
Final half hour of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Only on News Talk WOKV. Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, John Osher, Jeff Lagerman, and Joe Fortunato. Here's a tweet for you. It says, and I can't read it verbatim, so I'll have to paraphrase, but it's anyone who doesn't think the Jaguars can win the division has their head up there. You figure that
say
one
that
out.
Say that again now.
Okay. Anyone who doesn't think the Jaguars can win the division has their heads up there. Now, my response is, what over the last 4 weeks has given you that opinion? That's a, you know,
well, that's
where the 11 men, you know, that's where when you've got 10 on the field or 12 on the field or a missed snap, that's where you say, okay, prove it. You go to Pittsburgh and you win this week, it's a completely different discussion.
You're back in it.
You're back in it.
Exactly. As crazy as that sounds, you're back
you're
in
it. You're absolutely, you are right back in it. But you got to go do something to earn the right to say that.
And, but that's a statement more of the weakness of the division right now than a statement of how we're playing football.
I would totally agree. But if you go play well, I mean, we talked about the defense and how well it's played.
You got to win.
Times. If the quarterback can go up there and handle it, if you can run the ball, if you don't have 12 men on the field or 10 on 4th and 7, if you put those pieces in place, well, then you can have a discussion. And Jack said it last week, you know, we can win the division before they lost to the Saints. Or was it after they lost to the Saints that he said that? Maybe it was after he lost to the Saints before they played the Bengals. But you can have a discussion.
The Saints lost.
Yeah. You can have a discussion. You go beat the Steelers on the road. You can all of a sudden, Dave, who sent the tweet, you can introduce that subject matter.
Well, I think you've got to win a couple over a three-week period before. I mean,
would agree.
It'd be great to beat the Steelers, but you've got to do something more than once right now if you're this team.
All right, but
and they can, but you got to do it.
But you go beat. But here's why I say that: the Texans go get beat by the Ravens. Just say, right? They're 3-3. You go beat the Steelers. You're 2-4. You're only a game out of first place. Now all of a sudden you can start saying, okay, well, what happens if you beat Baltimore? You can at least have the conversation if you do something.
Well, here's the
you can't do it when you're scoring 11 points a game.
If you can get to 3-5 and one of those victories is against the Texans.
Yeah. Well, then you're 2-0 in the division.
You actually are in this thing for the second half. And you can hope then. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you really are. 3-5, one of the wins is the Texans because that means they're at best 5-3, most likely 4-4.
And it means you've beaten them at their place.
You've beaten them at their place.
And that would mean winning a couple over three. I just think that
you gotta win
one win's great.
Two of the
everybody
next
three. Knows in the NFL, you can win one game. You know,
absolutely.
But
you got to win two of the next
three.
You got
to get something that's, you know, that's substantial going.
But what I'm saying is if you win one game, you can at least talk a little bit like this. You can't talk like that when you're 1-4 and have lost 4 in a row. You're a game back.
He
and
can't.
You beat the Steelers on the road.
He can't. He's a fan. That's the beauty.
Yeah, but we can't. I mean, sure. There's no legitimacy to it at all. And I'm not saying that if you go beat Pittsburgh, all of a sudden you're in the race. It's just if you do, you can at least start thinking about it that way.
Yeah. You got to put a couple wins together.
Exactly. You got to go prove it. Can't now, talk about it.
You can't sit there and talk about something that's down the road. You got to talk about 1 week.
Well, you got to do it.
You got to stop talking about, you know, we're going to win the division or whatever, and you got to stop talking about, well, if we would have done this, we would have done that, we'd be this. You just got to go do it.
They have to stop figuring out ways to lose games at the end of games.
Start closing them out. closing them out. And then hopefully special teams will get back on track. I mean, special teams has just been, I mean, it's like an anchor, you know, slowing the progress down. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you have a young quarterback, you want to play good D, right?
Yes.
They're playing good defense. You want to have solid special teams that's going to put you in great field position for a young quarterback. Hadn't happened. You want to have a solid running game to support a young quarterback. You got that. So right now you got the defense, you got the running game, got a quarterback who's making strides. The thing that you're really lacking right now is some key plays at key moments, and special teams is killing this team.
And I wasn't here last year, but is that the biggest surprise to you guys?
No question.
Okay.
No question. You know, I mean, holy cow, the only thing that's different, you got a different returner, you know, and then you've got a different punter.
Two of them.
And then you've had, obviously, you know, two Pro Bowl special teamers that haven't been available.
That,
I mean,
hurts.
You know, that
hurts
doesn't help.
Bad.
Because, I mean, those guys are leaders. They set the tempo in that room. And Matt Turk, goodbye. Farewell. Good riddance. It's not a matter of directional punting. You just flat out stunk.
Well,
I hope he's listening.
Yeah. Maybe to the
I doubt
radio,
it.
Had to reiterate that again.
I doubt it.
Well, you get Nick Harris, who's 2 years younger. Pardon me, 10 years.
Ten, right.
10 years younger. Sorry, 10 years younger. And you get those two guys back, perhaps, in Montel Owens and Kasim Osgood. You should be remarkably better.
You hope. I mean, you hope. And you hope Cecil Shorts gets back to showing what we saw in August. Well, what we saw in August was a playmaker, smooth returner, a guy that we were excited about. And right now,
is that Mount Union?
Maybe.
I mean, is that a rookie out of Mount Union with no offseason
maybe
to adjust?
Maybe. And I'm not ready to say that the guy's, you know, was a bad pick and he's garbage. I'm not ready to do that.
Right.
No, I mean, I'm just saying he's got talent.
He's from a small school without an offseason to get ready, and he could flash in the preseason when everything was simple, and now it's more complex.
I was told by another coach on their team that liked Cecil Shorts, but said he was very raw coming in, and then he'd need a lot of – he had all the tools,
right,
just very raw. Well, I think we're seeing that right now, because whether it's not lining up in the right place or not running the right route or not finishing routes or sloppy routes.
You know,
here's the thing, though. What concerns me, Jeff, and – John and Brian, it's not just him with the sloppy routes.
Right.
It'd be one thing if the other three or four receivers you're running out there are running these crisp routes and getting open and catching the ball and making moves after they catch the ball and yards after the catch. Then you'd be like, oh, well, you know, he's a rookie. We'll let him sit there and develop. But you're seeing it from the entire room.
You know what it really kind of comes down to? We sit there and we – during one of the breaks, we're looking at the Steelers roster, how it was built, and we're looking at this history of drafts. If the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted Cecil Shorts, do you think that they would be expecting him to make an impact right now?
No.
Right.
No way. No way. Because they would have a roster that would be strong enough that they wouldn't expect that out of him.
I think the same thing's true of Will Rackley.
Will Rackley, same thing. Look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ziggy Hood, a first-round pick from a year ago, is backing up. The
right.
First-round pick from this year, Cameron Hayward.
Backup.
He's a backup.
The really good
teams. The second-round pick linebacker from a year ago, he's a backup.
The really good teams consider most guys outside the first round on a redshirt year. Just very close to it.
If you have a solid roster, it gives you that luxury.
Right.
The problem with this team is that they have not had the foundation established. And if they can get that foundation established, and Gene Smith has time to build the roster, then you can have a Cecil Shorts that's inactive on game day, and he's not having to do that.
But you have to see the rest of the group progressing and modeling. Here's the other thing. Is there anyone modeling the way it's supposed to be done to Cecil?
I mean, as far as, like, veteran guys
yeah.
showing the way? No.
Or can he turn on the tape saying, this is what this route looks like. This is what we want to see.
But that, again, is the mark of an established team.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
To have a veteran 6-7 year pro at every spot is – that's the residue of having done it right for 10 years. And, you know, this team's done it right for a couple of years.
I mean, ask Maurice Jones-Drew what it meant to come here and have Fred Taylor –
That's a great example.
In the room.
Yeah, that's a great example.
I mean, listen, Maurice was going to be a good player no matter what, but I think if you ask Maurice, part of why he's become a great player, if not the best back, one of the top three backs in the NFL, is he sat and watched Fred Taylor, a true pro, a guy who was outstanding at his position, how he prepared, how he ran the ball, how he handled himself.
And it made Maurice compete for his and piece
made,
of the pie.
And it made him want to be better because he saw greatness.
But that means that what I just said there, I think, means a lot. You make a player compete for their piece of the pie, and they don't get the piece of the pie out of necessity. Maurice had to compete for every carry that he had because he had Fred Taylor out there. If Maurice wasn't good enough, he wouldn't have gotten the carries that he had back then. You know, if you have players that are established, and then as you bring them in, the players understand, here's a way to do it. If I'm going to expect to be able to earn play time, I have to earn it, and I have to show that I can contribute at the level that the established guy has.
While he was learning and watching, he was also returning punts and kicks. Would you ever let him do that again, or is that all
for
him?
Yeah. No.
But Mike Thomas?
Yes. Oh,
yeah, you're darn right.
I think he should be back there right now anyway.
Plus, you can always put a guy back there in fair catch. Just get it done. I mean,
he's the best catcher out of the bunch.
Then – if you're
Cecil
nervous
is.
About it, well.
Cecil is better than Mike?
Yep. Smoothest punt catcher in training camp all day long.
And on that
you just got to make the right decision to get underneath of it.
He hasn't had big problems catching the ball.
No.
And come back with a final segment after this on Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, about 10 minutes left in the program, and let's grab Dave up on the north side. Dave, how are you tonight?
I'm good, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I don't get a chance to go to the game, so I don't get a good look at Jared Dillard. Every time I see him, he's catching a ball. And another thought I had is Mike Thomas best suited on the outside, or can we move him to the slot and get Dillard more involved? And I really wanted your thoughts on Jared Dillard and his progress now that he's healthy.
I think he's been pretty good. I mean, when the ball's gone his way, he's caught the ball. Hadn't had very many opportunities. You know, it seems like there's times when they go two tight ends and a fullback, and Maurice Jones-Drew and on the field, and Jared Dillard's the wide receiver. I'm going, well, they're not going to throw it.
You know, I would put him in for Jason Hill and let him run those inside routes.
Yeah, when it's there's an inside route required, absolutely.
Tough
Jared
guy.
Dillard needs to be.
He is not afraid to go catch the ball, and I'm not.
That's where he's at.
That's where he's good. I don't want to, like Jeff said, I don't know why Jason Hill struggles in that area. He does. I just know Dillard doesn't.
Dillard's got four catches for 44 yards. He's got a 17 yarder. He's got a 25 yarder. I mean, over the course of his career, I think he's got 10 catches, and all of them have been for first downs.
Well, put him in. Play him.
There you go. 355 NFL 1. John is in Green Cove Springs and up next. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. The one thing I remember hearing, we come out was, you know, because Polish leaving as the punter, he's also the holder for Scobie, that, you know, Scobie was kind of nervous, and he's also been perfect so far, and now he's lost his holder, and I'm wondering if that was kind of one of the reasons why they left him there. And I'm kind of also wondering if that is maybe a good reason why the Jets have Mark Brunell going there. Because, I mean, you know, fire, fire, fire. You got a quarterback that's back there and holding the ball instead of a punter.
Usually I think a team makes the decision not based on if it's going to get screwed up, just based on who the best holder is and what the kicker's most comfortable with. So, and that's why it can be a quarterback, it can be a punter, it can be whoever is the most – capable, and I'm sure there's other guys in this team that can hold, and Josh will figure it out, and Josh is a very good kicker, and I don't think it'll be an issue.
Well, it's going to be something to watch.
It'll be something to watch, but I mean, Josh has done a good job of adjusting.
Yeah, I think Nick Harris is going to hold from what he said today, and
yeah.
I see that as something you work on in practice, and it shouldn't be a huge issue, but yeah, it's certainly something to watch.
You hope not.
It's not supposed to be.
I mean, you got 3 days.
Punter wasn't supposed to be an issue either, though, Jim.
You got 3 days to work on Josh Scobie's new holder.
Right, and that's what practice is for, right?
Practice?
You just hope, though, that the kicker is going to get comfortable in 3 days. You know, some kickers are, emotional nutcases.
But Scobie's
not. Some of them think that, they've only got a 10% chance of hitting a good ball.
Scobie's a pretty balanced guy.
You're right. Scobie is, although he got really used to Adam Podlesch for a couple of years. I mean, he raved about Podlesch and his
ability
to hold.
And Turk was the holder this year, and he struck the ball very well. He'll be fine.
All right. There you go. Here's some games around the NFL. Thoughts, guys, Carolina at Atlanta. Boy, Atlanta is struggling.
Atlanta's not very good, I don't think.
Best team in the NFC last year until the playoffs.
I think
they're not getting the production out of Matt Ryan. He's not playing at the level he did last year.
There's a lot of people in the last couple of years that were talking about Matt Ryan being an upper echelon and saying he's one of the elite quarterbacks, and I was saying I don't believe so. He ain't earned it yet, and he is not there yet. And what Thomas Dimitroff did to get Julio Jones was a huge mistake. We said it then. I'll say it now, and I'll say it in the future. No matter how good Julio Jones turns out to be, he gave away everything. You can't do that.
I agree.
Not in this league anymore.
No. We saw that with Derek Harvey, which is exactly what the Jaguars did to shore up their pass rush in 2000. And
it wasn't a Ricky Williams trade, but it was
close.
Pretty close.
It was close enough.
Philadelphia at Washington.
That's a great game.
This is a reversal of what we thought.
That's a great game. I mean, the Philly's division rival, team struggling.
Yeah, backs against the wall. They're talking about Andy Reid's job and players having to come out and defend him.
Eagles
are
just
Washington
happy
and
that it's not at home.
And that defense is pretty good.
Washington, yes.
Yeah.
They got a good defensive coach.
Philly's defense is not.
Right.
That's another thing that makes you go, you got to be kidding me, is that Andy Reid named an offensive line coach, a defensive coordinator.
Hey, it'd be nice to the offensive line guys.
Good offensive line coach.
You always said he
make
was.
Make him an offensive coordinator. To make an offensive line coach over to a defensive coordinator. Wow. I mean, talk about
unconventional.
Yeah.
St. Louis at Green Bay. I for one thought St. Louis was going to be better than 0-4.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Buffalo at the New York Giants.
That's a good game.
It's a good game.
Giants better be careful.
They weren't very careful last week, were they? Three interceptions by Eli Manning, and they fall at home to
Kevin
Seattle.
Kevin Gilbride sometimes gets into this mode. 1998 AFC title game. Gets in this mode.
96, you mean.
Gets in this mode that he wants to throw the ball all over the yard. Run the ball, Kevin. Just run the ball.
San Francisco at Detroit.
Great game, and a game that nobody thought would be great going into the year.
No.
Jim Harbaugh,
coach of the year
right now.
Jim Schwartz is a pretty good coach, too.
The Lions are just good.
Lions are good, and Jim Schwartz has done a great job, but they're talented. San Francisco, I don't know how talented
they
are.
Their defense is good.
I know that, but I'm saying overall, I mean, Detroit's good on defense and offense.
The Lions are a great example. You realize that until the final four games of last year, they were 4-40, and then they won the final four. They've won 9 in a row now. I mean, they stunk. They were 0-16, 2-10, 2-14, 6-10, but they grabbed Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson, and Dominick Sue, and they filled in spots, drafted well, and look at them now.
When you pick in the top five a lot, you're supposed to be pretty good.
And now they are.
They missed a
lot that did and haven't.
No, I know, but that's...
They are now. Indianapolis at Cincinnati. I think we talked about that one earlier. Cleveland at Oakland.
Oakland's
going to
run all over them.
I agree.
Houston at Baltimore.
Great game. I think Baltimore's too tough for him. I think Baltimore's too physical.
No Mario Williams for the rest of the year.
I think Baltimore wins that, but I think it's close.
You know what, though? Watching a Houston defense a little bit, Antonio Smith, J.J. Watt, Brian Cushing.
They're good.
Those are really good football players.
Not great, though. They're good football players, but they're not a great defense.
No, not great defense, but those are really good players.
New Orleans at Tampa Bay.
Great game. That's the game I'm doing this
week.
All right.
Tampa's coming off a thrashing in San Francisco.
Yeah, but if you think back, if you look at, they're the youngest team in the football. They played an emotional Monday night game, first time at Monday night in a long time, first sellout in 2 years. Big win at the end of the game. I know it was
against
Indy.
And then all the way to the West Coast.
And it's tough to go west after the
A short week and going all the way to San Francisco against a very good San Francisco team. Young team.
Yeah,
That doesn't surprise me.
They always struggle out west. Tampa.
Something that I didn't know, the Green Bay Packers, you talk about youngest team, Green Bay Packers,
second.
Third.
Oh, is it third? I thought they were second.
Third youngest team in the National Football League.
Yeah, scary. A couple more games, but we'll only grab one of them, Dallas at New England.
I think that's a good game.
It's a 4:15 job on Sunday afternoon. All right, fellas, thanks so much.
See you Wednesday.
Travel safely to
Tampa.
Thank you. See you guys on the plane to Pittsburgh. Have a great night, everybody.